Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Kuf Yud Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the second line from the top of daf kuf yud tes. Please note that Rashi occupies both columns where you will usually find the Tosfos on this daf. There is no Tosfos commentary, and that applies also to Omid Beis. You will see Rashi occupying both columns. We continue with a quote from the Mishnah, which was discussing situations where you would avoid purchasing items as a result of a suspicion that maybe the one selling to you has no right to sell. He's selling what belongs to a real owner or belongs to someone else. So the Mishnah had said, "Velo mishomrei peros," items that you're not allowed to buy from those that are charged with watching fruits or watching orchards. Rova zovin shavishta me arisa. Rovin purchased bundles of branches. Branches could be used for fuel and other purposes as well. He bought branches from a sharecropper, an oris. Omar le Abaye. Abaye questioned Rava, how can you buy from him? V'hotnan lo mishomrei peros. You are not to buy from those that are hired to guard fruits. Eid simu peros. Not wood nor fruits. The guards being suspect of selling the owner's wood or fruits, and he's not licensed to do so. Omar le. So Rava answers, Hani mili bishomer. The restriction of the Mishnah is with regard to a guard. De lesle begufa de ara midi. He has no holding, no acquisition, no ownership whatsoever in the land itself. As you can understand very easily, he's hired to guard, and that's it. Aval oris, a sharecropper. De isle begave. He has a holding in the land. Certainly in the sense of the produce of the land, he has a share in it. I therefore can ascribe the items, the branches that he is selling, is he's selling from the portion that he would be receiving rightfully. Therefore, there's no reason to avoid purchasing branches from a sharecropper. Tonu Rabbonan, Shomrei Peros, Loikhin Mehan, Kishen Yoshvin Umurchin, Vasalin Lifnam, Viturtini Lifnam. Shomrei Peros, the ones hired to guard fruits, which we just saw in the Mishnah, one is not allowed to buy from them fruits. However, if they are sitting in a very public fashion with large baskets in front of them and a scale to weigh out the produce is in front of them. So, as Rashi says, they're selling in a very open, public fashion. You can buy from them. There's no reason to suspect that it's stolen. They wouldn't have the nerve to sell in such a public fashion stolen goods. The kulan shomru, all those that we've said you're not, that you're allowed to buy from them. However, if they said hatmein, after selling you the item, they say go hide it. Usser, it's then prohibited to buy from them. Their instruction to hide is an indication that there's something suspicious, i.e. that what they're selling they had no right to sell, and they want you to hide so as not to reveal what happened. Loitchin mehen mi pesach hagino avolo me achure hagino. You can buy from them when they're selling at the entrance to the garden. They're selling produce at the entrance, but not when they are selling from the back side, the achore, the non, we'll say, main entrance area, the back entrance, if you will. Itmar Gazlon Me'emas Muter Liknois Himenu. A person who is known as a thief. From when, what point in time can you buy items from such an individual? Rav Amar Achete Roiv Mishalo. Only at a point where the majority of that which he is selling is definitely his. Ushmul Amar Afilu Miut Shalo. Even if the minority of items is definitely his, you can buy from a thief. What's the reasoning there? We assume that that item that you are buying is from that which he actually owns. You can see that Shmuel is not influenced by the fact that you have a majority that would be questionable, i.e. a majority of merchandise that is not his. There's a sukya earlier in this Masicht on Daf Mem Vov where the issue of do we decide matters of mammon, financial matters, based on a majority or not. Here you might be able to parallel this machlokas Rav and Shmuel to their very machlokas back on Daf Mem Vov, where Shmuel there too said ein hoichin b'mammon achar horov. We continue in the Gemara. Ori le Rav Yehuda la'ada daila. Rav Yehuda issued a ruling for Ada Daila, Kedivrei Ha'omer Afilu Miut Shelo, like the opinion of Shmuel, that said even if the minority of items that he's selling are definitely his, you can buy from him with the, we'll say, with the assumption that that which he is selling is actually his. The next point mentioned in the Gemara concerns Mamon Mosur. A Mosur, we've seen in recent Dapim, is an individual who will hand over, will direct the idol worshippers to property that which is owned by a Jew to confiscate. Rashi says on a Mosur is Malshin Hamois Hamoiser Momon Chaver Lanosim. The Gemara. Momon Mosur, Rav Huna v'Rav Yehuda. There is a disagreement between them. Chad Omar Mutter La'abdo Biyad. One says that you can destroy his property, that which belongs to the Mosur, in a proactive fashion. The Chad Omar Osur La'abdo Biyad. And the other opinion says that one is not allowed to destroy the property of a Mosur. Mad Omar Mutter La'abdo Biyad. The opinion that says one is allowed to do so, the thinking is like this. Lo yehe mamaynoi chomur migufo. We don't want his property to be treated more strictly, more in a more honorable fashion than his own body. What do we mean by that? Well, in Maseches Avodah Zorah Daf Chof Vov, the Gemara tells you that one is allowed to eliminate a Mosur. The example given by the Gemara is one can put him in a pit and let him die over there. That's how severe an offense being Moser Momon Yisrael in fact is. So we know that we can eliminate the man himself, so we don't want a situation where we're treating his property with greater dignity than the man himself, and therefore if you can eliminate the Mosur himself, you are allowed to eliminate his property. Umadam Osur Labdo, he who says that it's forbidden to ruin, to destroy his property, Dilmo Havile Zara Malia, because of the possibility that he might have children, offspring, descendants that are positive, ma'alya, good people, uksiv, and there is a pasuk that says, yochin v'tzadik yilbash, that we, you see printed in your Gemara the word Rasha, however, the commentaries mention that the word Rasha doesn't appear in the actual scripture. However, the understanding of the pasuk, in fact, is that Yochin Rasha, the wicked, in this case the Moser, he prepares, he amasses his wealth, And then the tzaddik comes along, the descendant comes along, Yilbash, and will wear it, will enjoy it, will benefit from it. Rav Chisda, Havile Hahu Arisa. Rav Chisda had working for him a sharecropper, David Tokil V'yoyiv Tokil V'shokil. Rashi has two explanations as to what Tokil V'yoyiv. I'm going to use right now the second explanation that he gives, which is an easier approach to this discussion, and that is that sharecroppers in general, in this area where Rav Chisda was, would take 1/3 of the produce of the field. In Rav Chisda's case, the oris was taking more than he had coming to him. He was taking half. Now, literally, the words tokil is to weigh out, v'yohiv, and give, tokil, and shokil was weigh out and keep for himself. Rav Chisda then, salke, removed him. Kora anafshe, and seeing that he was successful in removing the sharecropper, Rav Chisda referred to himself the following, a posuk, v'tzofun latzadik chel chotei. Tzofun, from the word sofeh, is to look upon, to gaze upon, to anticipate. The righteous can anticipate. Tzofun letzadik, there is anticipated to the righteous the chel, we'll say the booty, the amassed wealth of the chote, of the sinner. So that Rav Chisda, he's the tzaddik, the pious one. His oris was a sinner, and Rav Chisda, by removing him, then was able to recover that which he had a right to. Having quoted the posuk a few lines ago, Iyov Perek Chav Zayin, posuk Yud Zayin, the Gemara now quotes from the same perek, the same area. In Eo Perek Chav Zayin here, Pasuk Ches, and this Pasuk also refers to the wicked, refers to thieves, and it says in the Pasuk, and we should note that we have a long point marking. In this section of Gemara, we'll see a machlokis between Rav Huna and Rav Chisda, how to darshan, how to explain this posuk, especially one word in the posuk, and you can see we've dashed underlined the word nafsho on the next line. Now the posuk says, "Kima tikvas chonef ki yivtza ki yeshel elika nafsho." Rashi on this posuk, on the first half of the posuk, "Kima tikvas chonef ki yivtza," Rashi in his commentary on the scripture says, and we've included this on the side of our Gemara, ki lomo ehye rosha v'gazlan. Why should a person be wicked and a thief? Ma soifoi shel rosha hagozel momo. What is the end of the wicked one that steals people's money? Where does it all lead to? And the pasuk goes on to say, ki yeshel elikanafsho, the Almighty will throw away his spirit, will eliminate him. That's the simple approach to the pasuk. However, there's another opinion on it. And we read on in the Gemara, Rav Huna of Rav Chisda. Chad omar, nafsho dinigzal. V'chad omar, nafsho shogazlon. The nafsho in this pasuk is the subject of a disagreement. One says, it's the spirit of, or the life of, the victim, and the other says it's the life of the nefesh, the spirit of the gazlan. Now, the simpler approach is the second approach, the spirit of the gazlan, where the pasuk is saying that the one who's a thief has no hope, has no future. The Almighty will throw away his soul. The first pshat, the first opinion, that the word nafsho in the posuk is referring to the life of the victim. So we'll see more about that, how to figure that into this particular posuk as we go on in the Gemara. It's also recommended to look at the Marsha commentary on that point. Man domar nafsho shel nigzal dichtiv, the approach that says that the one who is damaged, who is cast away, is the nigzal, is the victim of the theft. Dichtiv, there's a pasuk that says ki orchus kolbotzea betza es nefesh be'olov yikach. The way of thieves is to take away the soul of the victim. So you see, in this pasuk, nefesh be'olov, the life of the owner of the items that were stolen, i.e., the victim. Through gezeilah, we have what is tantamount to the killing of the victim. So that you see, this idea of a person who is victimized by theft is viewed as being killed. Uman da Omar nafsho shel gazlan, the opinion that says that it's the life of the thief that's tossed away. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, "Al tigzel dal ki dalhu ve'al tidake oni bashar." Do not steal from the poor just because he's poor. Do not oppress the indigent at the gates. Ki Hashem yoriv rivam v'kova es kaveim nefesh, and that means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, will intervene and he will steal the life of those that steal from others. So we see in this pasuk a reference to the nefesh of the thief being eliminated. Having presented the two psukim, each opinion having a pasuk favoring, we'll say, his approach, now we go back and forth. What does the other one do with this pasuk? The idach nami hogsiv nefesh ba'olav yikach, the man d'omar that said the nefesh referred to in the pasuk above was the nefesh of the gazlon, the life of the thief himself. What about the pasuk that says nefesh ba'olav yikach, which is mashma that it's the life of the victim that is eliminated, the victim meaning the one stolen from? The Gemara says, well, the opinion that says gazlon, that it's the nefesh of the thief himself, my ba'olav, what is ba'olav in the pasuk of nefesh ba'olav yikach a reference to? Ba'olav the hashta, the current owner, the current possessor. After someone steals, so he's in possession of the stolen goods. So the pasuk is telling us that the one who is holding on stolen goods as a result of stealing them, his nefesh will be taken by the Almighty. The idach nami hogsiv, the opinion that says the life of the victim, but do we not have a pasuk that says the kava is kaveyem nefesh? And we saw before that those who steal from the poor, the Almighty in turn will take away their lives. And so the pasuk, the nefesh there indicative of the thief. So the opinion that says nafsho shel nigzal will say matam komar. What is the reason for the life of the thief being taken away? Matam v'kova es kaveim. Why will the Almighty take them away? Mishum dekav I nefesh, because they stole from others. In other words, they stole from the nigzal. So nefesh, again, according to the opinion that said nefesh is the nigzal, remains, in fact, the nefesh of the nigzal, of the victim. Here we have a drasha of Rabbi Yochanan. You'll notice we have a long marking. And Rabbi Yochanan, in this discourse, elaborates on the severity of stealing even a very minor amount of money, even a shove pruta, the smallest amount of denomination. One who steals from his friend is in violation of quite a few verses, as we'll see now. Omar of Yochanan, Kol ha-gezel es chavero shove pruta, he who steals even a shove pruta, a pruta worth of goods from his friend, kilu noitel nishmosoi mimenu. It's as if you're killing the guy. On a general philosophical note, Torah law, if you haven't already realized it, is very careful, very mindful of other people's property. And when we speak about other people's property, we don't draw the line at some midpoint, but even the smallest amount of property, and that's presented to us by referring to it as a shofet pruta, even that small amount is considered of significance, to the extent that one who steals a shofet pruta from his friend, it's as if you're taking his life. What is noteworthy that in Rabbi Yochanan's comment, he doesn't make a distinction between a poor man and a rich man, leaving room to think, to ponder. Maybe it's a reference to someone who's very wealthy as well, that if he's missing a pruta, it's not going to make one bit of difference to his financial security, impinge at any way or form on his way of life. But if I may just express a personal note on that, just to illustrate the idea of a shoveh pruta being considered like killing someone, and to appreciate that, even in the context of someone who's very wealthy, imagine the following scenario. A man of great wealth went into a store to buy some minor sundry item. And he paid whatever the item cost, a matter of less than a dollar, and he takes out some change to pay the individual and to pay the salesman, and he expects change in return. So if the item cost 59 cents, and you gave the vendor, the seller, 60 cents, you're expecting a change of 1 penny. If, let us say, the person took your 60 cents, put it in the cash register, and finished the sale without giving the man his change. There are people, and regardless of their level of wealth, there are people that are expecting to receive that penny in change. And if they don't get it, they feel that they were wronged, and they might even make it to do about it. You might ask yourself, well, so what? 1 penny, you make it to do over it? So there's something deeper over here, and it's not just the issue of the value, the money per se, but there's something that is of a, we'll say, of a psychological nature, of a spiritual nature, that we define as a wrong has been done, and it can hurt people, upset people, and hence Rabbi Yochanan's comment should be taken seriously, and quite likely regardless of the financial level of the person who was wronged. So Rabbi Yochanan says, he who steals from his friend even a shoveh pruta is considered like killing him. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Kein orchos kol botzea betza, es nefesh be'olav yikach." We saw this pasuk cited just a few lines up. The reference to someone who steals from someone else—it's as if he killed them. The oimer, there's another pasuk, and when you see a setup like this, where a series of psukim are quoted to illustrate one point, almost inevitably the Gemara will ask, what do I need to have all of these additional psukim for? And that will take place here. So as you look ahead on the page, you can see we've squiggle underlined and used numbers leading up to four different verses to illustrate Rabbi Yochanan's point. V'omer, v'ochal, kitzircha v'lachmecha, yochlu bonecha uvnoisecha. Rashi, a few lines up from here in the Rashi column, V'yochal kitzircha v'lachmecha, v'doyme l'cha k'oichel bonecha v'noisecha, l'fi she'ein l'cha shuv b'meh l'farnasam. The pasuk is describing someone who comes and consumes your harvest and bread. It's as if they're consuming your children. And Rashi's explanation is that you don't have any more the means of supporting them. So it's as if this thief who took away your food, your produce, is therefore eliminating your children as well. V'yoymer, another pasuk says, Mechamas b'nei Yehuda sheshafchu dam noki ba'artzam. The pasuk described Hamas is a form of theft. From the theft that they committed, it's viewed as if they spilled a lot of blood, that they committed mass murder. V'yoymer, another pasuk, El shovel beis hadomim al asher imis es agivonim. The pasuk describes Shaul as having killed the Givonim, the Gibeonites. We'll get back to them and this pasuk in a few moments. My V'yoymer, the Gemara here is asking, what do I need all of these psukim? What do the additional psukim add to my understanding of Rabbi Yochanan? V'chitem onefesh didei, you might think that had I just had the first pasuk, I would say that the thief who steals is considered as if he's killing the owner of the item himself. Avol nefesh bono v'vnoisav lo. But he's not viewed as if he's killing the children of the victim as well. Toshma, therefore, pasuk number 2 indicates that, in fact, such is the case. Toshma, basar bono v'vnoisav. V'chitemo hani mili. And had you just the first and second psukim, I would have thought, when is he considered a murderer? Hecha de lo yoiv domi, where he doesn't pay money and take the item. Aval hecha de yoiv domi, lo. But if someone forcibly takes the item, but he pays for it, we mentioned a few moments before the word, when we read pasuk number 3, mechamas, I said it was a form of theft. What do we mean by a form of theft? Because here, in the case of Hamas, the villain is paying money, but he's doing all of this by force. He's forcing the money on the owner and forcibly taking his item in exchange against the will of the owner. So, without citing pasuk number 3, I would have thought that the description of theft as being parallel to murder does not include a case where the villain pays. So, therefore, Toshma, I cite pasuk number 3, Mechamas b'nei Yehuda, asher shofchu dam noki ba'artzam, that even through force payment, you still are classified as a gazlan. V'chitemo hani mili hecha deka'ovit b'yodayim. You might have thought that all of the, let's say, villainous descriptions that we've seen are where someone behaves in a proactive fashion. That's Ovid Biodaim. He does something literally with his hands, but in a proactive form. He is the one causing the loss, either stealing the item or forcibly taking it even for money. Avol, Gromalo, but something that's of a merely causative nature, no. Namely, where you're not directly stealing, maybe that's not considered like murder. Toshma el shov el beis hadomim al asher hemis es hagivonim. The pasuk refers to Shol and his house of bloodshed for their murder of the givonim. V'chi hechon motzinu shaharag Shol es hagivonim. Where do we find that Shol killed the givonim? The givonim were a people who had falsely represented themselves in the time of Yoshua in order to save themselves from being killed along with the seven nations inhabiting the land of Canaan at the time. In the time of Yoshua, what happened, without getting into the details, they were, as a result of their subterfuge, he condemned them to be wood cutters and water bearers for the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash. Now, in the time of Shaul, there was an incident in which the Kohanim of Noiv saved David from from Shaul, who was pursuing David, a pursuit to death. The Kaihanim saved David, provided food for him. Upon discovering that the Kaihanim of Noiv protected David, Shaul, who was in pursuit of David, became irate, and to the extent Elamitoch Shehorag Noiv Ira Kaihanim Shema speaking Lohemayim Umazon, Shaul oversaw, we'll say, or allowed for the execution of the Noiv. Noiv was a city in which the Mishkan had been located. We'll call it a Kohen city. He killed off the Kohanim there through Doeg Adomi, through one of his advisors, his right-hand men, who actually executed them. And now, as a result of the Kohanim being eliminated, they, the Kohanim, used to support the Givonim. We mentioned that they were made as servants to the Mishkan. But now the overseers, i.e. the Kohanim, who were in fact murdered in an actual form, now that they're gone, so who's going to support the Givonim? So the Gemara is pointing out that through Shaul's execution of the Noiv Ira Kohanim, Shahayu Maspikin Lohem Mayim Umazon, they, the Kohanim, used to provide water and food for the Givonim. Now they are not receiving their support. Ma'alov HaKosuv Kilu Horgan. It's as if Shaul killed the Givonim as well. So that you see, even through preventing support, Shaul didn't take away, didn't steal their food in a direct fashion. Through killing the Kehanim in a, we'll say, in a causative fashion, not a proactive fashion, the Givonim lost their food and water. It's as if Shaul killed them. So you can see that even causing the loss of means, even without directly removing the means, stealing the means of support, it's still considered like murder. Avoloichin min hanoshim. On the side of Gemara, we have a topic heading, which reads under the nosei me'achar diyesh chashash de noshim loichin mi baleim lelo rishus. Once we introduce this idea that purchase from women could be problematic because of the suspicion that they are taking from their husbands' items and then selling them without their husband's permission, Hagemara mevira brisa shemazbira ma mutar ma osur liknois oy lokachas mi noshim. The brisa, this Tanaic source, will elaborate on this point: what is allowed, what is not allowed to purchase from women, or when is one allowed to take things from women. Tonu Rabbanan, loichin min anoshim kli tzemer biudo kli pishton begolil. One is allowed to purchase fabrics, garments made of wool in the Yehuda region, or linens made in the Golil region. We had elaborated this when we saw this in the Mishnah back on Daf Kuf Yud Ches Omid Beis, and there we pointed out that women were occupied. That was a common practice of women to manufacture fabrics from the raw material, wool and linens. And Rashi on the Mishnah said, since that was their work, that was their common occupation, they were doing so with the knowledge of their husbands, so that the raw materials that they were using, that albeit belonged to their husbands, they were expected to make these final products and sell them. So all is done with the knowledge of their husbands. We continue in this brisa, avolo yenois ushmonim vesiltois. One is not to buy wine, oil, or flour. It's not the way of women to sell those things. Velo minu avodim, velo min atinokis, and likewise not from slaves nor from children. Abba Sholomer, Mecheres Isha Barbo V'chamisha Dinar Kedei Lasois Kipa L'Roisha. Abba Shol says that if it's a small amount that the woman is selling, 4 or 5 dinar worth, dinar is an amount of money, a type of form of currency, so 4 or 5 dinar worth of merchandise, she can sell. The translation, lasos kipos, to make a, from which she can then make or buy a head covering, it's an amount that, you know, even if it did belong to the husband and he didn't give her formal rights to sell, but that small amount is such that the husband would not be mindful of it. The chulon she'omru lahat min osir, all sales where the seller tells the buyer hide, then it's osir to buy from them. That shows us that there is something very suspicious. Gabai tztoka, those charged with the role of collecting charity, loikhin mehen dover muarav, lo dover muba, are allowed to take from women a small contribution, but not something large. Veha badodin, badodin are those that press olives into oil. Loikhin mehen can buy from women zesim bemida. They can buy olives from women. What does bemida mean? Rashi, you'll notice on the what would ordinarily be the Tosfos column, this, we'll call it the second column, fourth line from the top, v'shemen bemida. Or I should say, Lochem Anoshim, Rashi says, Zaysim Vishemin, Minu Koloma Derech Mechira, Befarhesia, the Derech Dovam Ruba, the Ein Yichoyim Lidlev Kolzos Velasis Bitsina. So the Loshem, the expression here is of buying from women, Zaysim, the Mida means a large quantity of olives, an amount that they wouldn't be able to sell in a covert fashion. So as we've seen before, that when things are done in a very obvious public fashion, there's no suspicion of theft. And likewise, v'shemen b'mida, one can buy from women oil in large quantities, avolo zesim b'muat v'shemen b'muat, but not small quantities of olives nor small quantities of oil. The word mu'at we explained here as a small quantity. However, there's another pshat that Rashi has when referring to zeisim b'mu'at. Mu'at is can mean ma'aton. It's part of the olive pressing process where the olives are placed under a heavy weight, and it's not normal to sell olives or oil at that point in the oil production process. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, loichin minoshim zeisin. Now, here again, you have a word that is questionable how to read it. Our Gemara text says b'moyed begola elyon. Another, the girsa that you see on the side is b'muat. So either it means b'moyed on the holiday, or b'muat means a small amount in gola elyon. In the upper Galilee, shepa'amim adam boish limkar al pesach beisoy v'noisein li'ishtoy mecheres. At times, people are embarrassed to sell, and at the entrance to their houses, so they have their wives do it. Rashi says begol elyon shashem and sham biyoyker u'makbid al dover muad. In the upper Galilee, oil was very expensive. And even small amounts, people would be mindful of. So, since a small amount is something that people would be mindful of, if the woman is selling it, you can assume that it's a legitimate sale. Otherwise, the husband would not let her do it. And here in this Tanaic source, we saw an We saw additional reasoning to that, and that the man himself is embarrassed to sit at the entrance to their homes and sell these small quantities of oil. But since it's of significance, even though it's a small amount, you can assume this explanation, that the woman did not steal it. Ravina, who was a Gabite stock, he was in charge of the charity collection, Ikla lebei mechuza, he went to that community called Bei Mechuza. Asu noshi lebei mechuza, the women folk of that community, Ramu kamei kavli vishiri, they threw at him, they contributed to his collection different types of jewelry, gold chains and bracelets. Kabil minayoni, accepted it from them. Amale Rabba Toisfa the Ravina. Rabba Toisfa, that's his name, asks Ravina, Vahatanya Gabai Tzdokim Mekablim Dover Muat Avo Lo Dover Meruba. The charity collectors are allowed to collect from women or receive from women only things of minor value, not things of expense, of great value. Amale Ravina answered, Hani, the jewelry that I accepted, Livnei Mechuza, regarding the townsfolk of Mechuza, were very wealthy people, Dovar Muat Ninhu, is in fact something of little value. This is in a relative sense, since they're people of great wealth, their a bracelet or a gold chain for them was not something of any significance. On the side of the Gemara, as we approach the new Mishnah, the Nosei reads, She'erios shel bad v'shel nasuris. Fragments of fabric and sawdust. Nasuris is sawdust or grain-like quality residue from the workmanship of a carpenter. We'll see also reference made to a person who chisels rock as well later in our discussion. Sheyirei v'neifil b'shas pulason. So these this residual material that falls during their workmanship, shel umanim, of these different craftsmen, lemihem shayachim, who is considered the owner of of these materials. The Mishnah, Muchin Shakeves Motzi Hare Elu Shalo. The Koves is a fuller. He's a person that washes and stretches and shrinks, particularly woolen fabric, woolen garments. So this Koves, when he's operating on his on woolen materials, there are strands and fibers, wool fibers, that become detached from the items that he was hired to work on. That's the muchen. Those are the fibers that the kaifes detaches or causes the detachment during his actions belong to him, as opposed to the owner of the fabric. V'shahasorek motzi, sorek is one who combs the wool. The fibers that are released from the wool during the process of srika, hare elu shabalabayas, those belong to the owner of the wool. There's a considerably greater amount of fibers that are detached or released during that process, more than in the case of the kvisa process. Kveis noitel shloisha chutin vehein shelo. Yeser mikain hare elu shaval abayas. In order to appreciate this, we look at Rashi again in the what would ordinarily be the Tosfos column, halfway down, a little more than halfway down. Kveis noitel gimel chutin. Derech Urge Bigdei Tzemer, the way of those who would weave wool, Laroig Shloisha Chutin Mimin Acher B'Seif HaBeged, at the end of the garment, they would add three threads of some other material. V'akeves noitlon umashve habegir miapeu. The koves, my understanding of just from the Rashi, because I don't have general knowledge of the production of fabrics in Talmudic times, but from the Rashi, you get the impression that after a garment was woven, or after fabric was woven into a garment, it was then processed by the koves. So the koves would receive a garment with three, we'll say around the border of the garment, three additional strands of some other material that were necessary for the koves necessary to be present during the process of Kvisa. He would remove those three strands, those three threads, and he would keep them. Yes, sir, Mikain, but more than three, hare elu shebala bayis. That would be the property of the owner of the garment. Im hoya shochor al gabi halova notel es hakul vehein shalo. If those strands or threads that form the border of the garment. And as I said before, these strands are, though I refer to it as the border of the garment, it's not the border of the garment that will eventually be worn. It's a border that's placed there at the point of it being woven before the kvisa process. If those strands, those threads forming the border, happen to be black on a white garment, then the koves can take all of them. The number of three, that limitation wouldn't apply, because black, any black strand on a garment that is supposed to be white would ruin the appeal of the garment, make it ugly. So it's quite understandable that the koves will remove them, and he can keep them for himself. Hachayet Shishir Esachut, the tailor that left a long piece of, or left a thread extending beyond whatever tailoring he was doing. Kedei Lithforbo, that's a shiur, that's an amount, a length. So, string or a thread left on a garment. Kedei Lithforbo. Umatlis shi gimel al gimel hare elu shabala bayis. If the thread left by the tailor measures kidei litforbo, and we said that's a certain amount, and more we'll discuss that in greater detail, or a piece of fabric that measures 3 by 3, those quantities will belong to the owner, the one that hired the chayat to work. The chayat cannot keep those. Ma shehachorosh motzi, a chorosh is a carpenter, so he works with wood, and there are, in processing the wood that he's given by the owner of the wood material with which to fashion items. So in working with the wood, he will use different devices to smooth down the raw wood. The Mishnah makes reference to the different tools, so that the residue, sometimes we refer to as sawdust or the saw or the wood filings. So that which is removed through b'ma'atzad, harei lu shelo. The ma'atzad tool, when you use it, produces a fine type of wood residue. Maybe we'll call it sawdust. That is something the carpenter can keep. Ubekoshiel, however, the wood filings that are released from the wood through the use of a koshiel tool, it's the name of another type of tool, those are larger pieces, so they belong to the owner. Vim hoya oise etzel balabayas af hanesores shel balabayas. If you're dealing with someone that's hired by the day, as opposed to a person hired to do the job, he's paid by the hour, paid by the day, as opposed to someone paid for the job. Someone who's paid for the job is called a kablon. Someone who's paid by the hour or on a daily rate, on a time rate, is called a sochir. So if he is a schir yom, that's what we're referring to right now, then even the fine residue belongs to the owner. Tanu Rabbanan, loikhin muchin min hakoyves mipnei shehin shelo. We saw that referred to in the Mishnah, that the fibers that are detached from the wool during the koves process, the kvisa process, the koves is the artisan, the craftsman who deals with kvisa. So you can purchase the muchen, the fibers from the koves, because they belong to him, as we saw in the Mishnah. Hakeves noitel shnei chutim ha'elyonim v'hein shaloi. You notice that we've dashed, underlined, shnei chutim. We saw the reference to three chutim, and here we have a reference to two chutim. We'll come back to that later in the Gemara. The koves is allowed to take two threads that form the border of the garment, the two upper threads, and they are his. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. V'lo yatil boy yoiser mishloisha chuvin. I want to point out at this point that for a good portion of this Omid of Gemara, recognition or familiarity with the nature of different vessels, different procedures, different materials, is really necessary for understanding the Gemara. We're going to refer to the realm of sewing, of carpentry, of some agricultural activities, and certainly if we had formal illustrations available, it would make the understanding here much easier. So with that disclaimer in mind, and just to reiterate, we offer our apologies for not being able to provide the necessary level of illustration, and along with that necessary level of explanation for a full practical understanding. With that in mind, though, we will continue and recommend that everyone look into the matters further. As far as this instruction, v'lo yatil bo yoyse mishlosha chuvin, we look at Rashi on the top line. V'lo yatil, Rashi, we mentioned earlier, occupies both columns. V'lo yatil bo yoyse mishlosha chuvin, derech hasorkim, it was the way of those that would comb the material. Loses lulaois shel tevi b'machat, they would insert loops of spun material and sew loops around the border of the fabric. And Rashi says in the length of the fabric, laorko shel beged she motcho bohen. During the combing process, you would comb the material and also beat it with sticks. In order to set up the fabric for the combing process, you would have to attach it to some type of, we'll say, frame or surface. And the material added to the material were loops. We have a what might appear as a crude illustration on the side of the Gemara, where you have loops, and they would hold the beged in place while the combing and beating process took place. Now, when that was finished, ukshenigmar bolten ubolten Oisai Mokum Halulois Shinim Tachsham, where the lulos, where those loops had been, so the garment was stretched a bit. We have a second illustration in the margin where you see what we're trying to illustrate is the points at which you had the loops, the lulos, the garment was stretched out. That's what the dashed line in that illustration indicates, where the garment was before the combing process took place, and where the curved lines appear, that shows you how the garment was stretched. So at that point that the fabric was stretched, Mashve Oison, the artisan, would even things out. V'noitel Oison Haktsuim La'atzmo, he would cut off where the garment was stretched and keep those fabric fragments for himself. Kidomer lekamon, as it will be stated later, vashminen tano shelo yitpareim looson lulois bechoska. What our Tana is telling here at this point is a reference to how those loops were attached to the garment, not to attach them into permanent a fashion, not too strong a fashion. If those loops are firmly attached, there's nothing stopping the craftsman or this artisan from stretching the garment even more. Elo, so how many stitches can you put in to the loop when you're attaching it to the garment? So the Tana tells us not more than 3 stitches. Gimel Chovin. And then he gives you a French word, balaz, gimel tfiros b'machad, 3 stitches, 3 needle stitches, at the point you're attaching those loops to the garment. V'lo yisroik habeged l'shesyoy elo li'orvoy. The word shesyo and orvo come from the word shtiv orev. In weaving garments, there were 2 thickness, 3 different thickness level of strands. They, in English, are referred to as the whoop and the wharf. The shti are the thinner strands running in one direction, and the orev, the thicker strands running in the opposite direction. Of course, when garments are made in a crisscross fashion. So the ruling here is that in the combing process, one shall comb along the shti, along the direction of the thinner strands. I should say the opposite. Do not comb the garment in direction of the thinner strands, along parallel to the thin strands, rather parallel to the thicker strands. And umashveu. Mashveu has to do with what we illustrated before in terms of cutting off parts of the stretched garment. Rashi says, "Umashveu mokum hablitois shenimtachsham," where, as a result of the stretching, so the garment was protruding outward. So no tail but misparan, you would cut that off. So that cutting off, umashveu liorkoi avolo lerochboi, you would cut off these in the length of the garment and not in the width. V'im bo lahashvoisoi ad tefach rashoi. Regarding this, Rashi says, "Afilu ad tefach litol mimenu rutsuos ruchovos tefach." The even if the protruding portions reached a handbreadth in length or in the distance that they protruded, that you're entitled to take to cut off. Omar, we quote from what we saw in this source. We have a little arrow which indicates you can look back at the bottom of Omid Aleph. It said in this source, Shnei Chutin V'hoanan Tanan Shalosh, but in the Mishnah we saw the removal of 3 strands. Why in this Brisa do we see only 2 strands that ran around the border that can be removed? Lo Kasha, there's no discrepancy. Ha Ba'alimi, if they're thick strands, those are alimi, then 2. Ha biktini, if they're thin, then 3. Velo yisroi kabegid lishesio ilo l'orvoi. One is not to do the combing process parallel to the shti, to the thin strands, but rather parallel with the thick ones. V'atanya ipcha, but do we not have a source that says the opposite? Lo kasha, no problem, no question. Ha beglimo, ha besarbalo. Depends on what kind of garment we are talking about, that we are combing. If it's a glima, Rashi says it's a glima is a daily type garment. If you comb it along the shti, along the thin strands, it's easy for it to tear. A sarbala is an outer garment that one wears for the purposes of dignity, of honor. It's more of a decorative type garment. And there, by combing it along the shti, it makes it nicer. V'lo yatil boy yoiser mishlosha chuvin. We mentioned that in attaching the loops to the garment for, we'll say, for stretching purposes or for combing purposes during which the garment was stretched, not to fasten the loops in too strong a fashion. The Tanaic source said on the top line not to insert more than three chuvin. Three, we'll say, stitches. Boy, Rabbi Yirmiya. When we speak about the needle being inserted with the thread to attach the loops to the garment, Amtuya V'asu Echad is a needle movement inserted and then drawn back and forth, the double movement creating a stitch. Is that called Chad? Is that called one stitch? And then you'd be able to do three of those stitchings? Dilma amtuye vasuye trey, or pushing the needle through in one direction and then pulling it back in the other direction is called two teku. That remains unresolved. Umashveu leorkoi avalo lerochboi. Ah, v'atani ipcha. Do we not have an opposite teaching? Lo kasha ha beglima ha behemyoni. It depends on which garment you are talking about. If it's a glima, then one direction applies, and if it's a hemuni, you'll find in translations the word girdle. It's probably a type of belt. Rashi adds to this that regarding the hemuni, Rashi says on this right across from here, Eino nirela shnei rosheha atluyin. You only see the two ends of this garment that descend. The lekach mashve lerochba shnei rosheh hatluyin. Therefore, the evening out process is done in the width, because at that width of the hemuni is that which is visible. The markings that you see now feature a diamond marking and a double underline, and then you also see a squiggle underline. The reference to these markings is on the side of the Gemara under our Nosei / Mivne heading. Sidra Shel Brisos, a series of Tanaic sources, She Meshutaf Lahem, you will find common to in these three sources, Ein Kainin, not to buy, Chomerim Shonim, different materials, Me'umanim Shonim, from different craftsmen. And in terms of markings, you'll see the different craftsmen are highlighted with a squiggle underline, and they include mi sorek, the comer, mi gardi, a weaver, mi tzaba, someone who paints. He dyes. Tzaba is someone who dyes garments. So now the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, ein loikin min hasorek. Muchin, mipnei she'enoi shelo. One is not to buy from the sorek, the literally the comer, or possibly the word carder, C-A-R-D-E-R, may apply over here. Not to buy from them, muchin, the fibers, mipnei she'enoi shelo, they don't belong to him. We mentioned this earlier, the difference between the koves and the sorek. And we saw in the Mishnah that which the sorek, the comer detaches, belong to the owner of the fabric. uvamokim shenohagu liyos shalolochen, in places that it was customary to leave the fibers with the sorek, with this particular workman, then you could buy from them. Uvachol mokim loichin mehen kar mole muchin vekeses maleo muchin. In all places you can buy from a sorek pillows and mattresses, the kar and keses, pillows and mattresses, that though they are full of these fibers, these wool fibers were stuffed in to make pillows and mattresses. And my taimo, why under those circumstances is it allowed? Answer: Kaninu Pashinu. Even if they belong to the owner of the fabric, but he, the sorek, this worker, subjected the muchen to a change, a shinui. And as we've seen oftentimes earlier in our Masechta, a means of acquisition, even if you're dealing with materials that were not yours at the outset, but if you subjected them to a change, then you thereby acquire it. Of course, you'll have to compensate the original owner the value of the original raw material, but the manufacturer, the produced, or the, I should call it the product, that's already something different, and he's entitled to sell that. Tonu Rabbonon, Ein Lochin Migardi, one is not to buy from a weaver, Lo Irin, Velo Nirin, Velo Funkelin, Velo Shire Pekios. We have a number of words over here, and Rashi, concerning a number of them, gives simple, straightforward French translations. We can look together at Rashi regarding Irin. Rashi says, Derech Gardi, Loniach Tzemer Bekone Shel Orev, Kedei Shelo Yetze Orev Minakone Lekan Ulekan, Vehu Shel Balabayas. So Irin is a piece of fabric that the weaver would stuff into the kone of the orev. The kone of the orev is part of the weaving apparatus. There would be, I believe it's called a shuttle, let's say wound around this kone would be the orev. That's the thicker fiber that's used in the weaving process, the thicker of the two strands. And in order to keep the fiber, this thread, the orev thread, from becoming dislodged, so pieces of fabric were stuffed in place, which is what Rashi just described. Those irin belong to the owner of the fabric being made, the owner of all of the materials. The gardi is simply a hired hand to produce the final product. So the irin belong to the balabayas. So one is not allowed to buy from a gardi those. He has no right to sell it. They don't belong to him. They belong to the owner. The other materials refer to other items, the nirin. So on this, Rashi gives a French word. It's a reference to rings that were part of the weaving apparatus, part of the knoll, that through which threads were passed. So they belong to the owner. They don't belong to the workman. The velo funkelin, again, Rashi gives you a French word which has to do with the frames that were part of the weaving apparatus. The Rashi elaborates a bit on funkelin. He says those frames shoisin liyrios hanerogis meumar veloy oisin luhu kone kederach agardin. They weren't made, the fabrics mentioned here were not made in the standard form, but rather using frames and as part of the weaving process. So do not buy funkelin from them, and not pkoyas. Pkoyas, Rashi again gives you a French word, which means balls of thread. Do not buy from the gardi. However, avol, the source goes on to say, Loichin mehen beged menumar orev ushti tovui viorig. On this we look together at Rashi, beged menumar klomar, afilu menumar bitzvoyim harbe, Begin minimum will be a garment that's made of many different colors, that's spotted with many different colors. Afalpi shiraglaim ledover shegonav atzemer min abgodim shorag. Even though there is an element of suspicion that he stole wool from the garments that he wove, loitchin mehen, you can buy the beged menumar from the gardi. Why? The kaninu b'shinu, he acquired it through subjecting it to change. Originally, if he stole pieces of woven wool, but now it's a garment, a multicolored garment. That's something that has undergone change from its original state. Tovi v'orig, Rashi says on that, Tovi v'orig v'hani irin d'amoron lo yikach. Those things that we said before, the irin, not to buy from them, im tolon hagardi lokhin dekaninu b'shinoi. If he subjected them to a change, then we say he acquires it, and you can therefore buy it from him. The Gemara asks, Amri, hashta tovi shakli. Tovi is wool that's been spun. So if you're talking about buying items that were made into, let's say, patches of, and they are spun, so orug mibaya, it's obvious that you could buy from them orug. Why? Because the tovui process precedes the ariga process, the weaving process. So if you can buy it from him because it's undergone spinning, then certainly that which is woven. So the Gemara says, my orig. What is orig that's referred to in this source? Tichi. Rashi says, tichi are sharsherois, and he gives again a French word, which is translated as tresses. Delo tavon kodem lochem. They were not spun beforehand. Ein tonu abonon, ein loikhin min hatzabo. We said the tzabo is someone who dyes fabrics. You don't purchase from a tzabo lo oisois, velo dugmois, velo tlushim shel tzemer. We take a look at Rashi. Rashi you'll find in the lower part of the outside column, oisois. When customers would bring a garment to have dyed, in the presence of the owner, he'll cut off a little piece to know whether this particular fabric will successfully absorb the dye. Sometimes that piece of fabric that he cut off from the original garment, he'll keep in his own possession, and the owner, in the meantime, forgets about it. So those are the oisos, and the source is telling us, don't buy them. Don't from the dyer. They're not his. The dugmois, Rashi says, shemivim loy habaylim tzemer litzvoa. People, customers, would bring to the dyer wool to dye. Umevi imoy ma'at tzemer tzavua. And in requesting a particular color, the customer would bring some pre-dyed wool. V'oimer kozet tzavali. Dye the major garment like this. And he shows him this little piece. Now, this little piece of pre-dyed wool was brought by the customer. It's not the property of the dyer. So don't buy from them dugmois. Likewise, tlushin shel tzemer. These are fibers that became detached from the shearings. Tlushin, Rashi says, shetolash min hagizo hatzemer me'at me'at. So those fibers that are detached, also not to buy from the dyer. Avol, we go on in the source and it says avol loichin mehen beged savua tovui u begodim. Rashi says, "Avaloifin mimenu begets of what the beged sholem lo gonav." If the dyer is selling a complete colored garment, he wouldn't have stolen that. Vinami gonvo, and even if he did steal a garment, but he acquired it, Kanya Bishini acquired it through the change that he subjected it to. The Rashi also says on the bottom line of that column, Tovu Yubigodim, Vahanoch Dugmois Shetovon I also may have begotten lochin. The dugmos that we saw referred to above, where the owner would bring pre-dyed wool. Those dugmos that the dyer spun or made from them articles of clothing that you can buy. That, again, is a function of his subjecting it to a change. The Gemara asks, Hashta Tovi Shokel, once you tell me that you can buy spun wool from him, from the dyer, Begodim Mibaya, Begodim are fully processed, fully manufactured clothing, that's obvious. Would it not have been subjected to spinning? The fibers were spun before made into a garment, so if you're buying from him a garment, it already had been acquired at the spinning stage. So why tell me that you can buy from him begodim when that's obvious? My begodim, the begodim referred to in this source, nimti. Nimti is possibly felt. It's a type of garment that the strands or the fibers used to manufacture did not go through the spinning process. So we when referred to begodim, we're not referring to something that had previously undergone the Tovi process. Tonu Rabbanan, Hanoisein Oireis La'abdon, one who gives leather or skins to a tanner. Hakitsuin Vatlushin Hare Elu Shebal Abayas. The kitsuin are leather trimmings. Tlushin is fibers, wool fibers, hair fibers that got detached from the skins. Those belong to the owner, the one who owns the skins. He brings it to a tanner to process, but so it doesn't belong to the tanner. V'oile umishtaf b'mayim hare elu shelo. In the tanning process, so the skins are washed, and certain fibers or fragments float to the surface. Those can be kept by the Avdon. They're very minimal in significance. Im hoya shochar b'chulei, Omar Rabbi Yehuda, katsra shmei, v'katsra shokil lei. The katsra is a word referring to the koves. A koves, as we mentioned, he's the fuller. He processes wool garments, and in doing so he shrinks them and thickens them. He's also called a katsra. Rashi says, katsra shmei v'katsra shokilei, ha-koves nikro katsri v'loshen arami. In Aramaic, the koves is called katsri. V'katsra shu, why is that the word referring to him? Because he is shumakatsim in abeged, reduces from the original garment. Iu shokilei v'didehu. We saw in the Mishnah, in referring to the kaves, that he can keep the muchin. These are fibers or strands that get separated when he is doing his craftsmanship, and that contributes to, we'll say, the shortening of the garment. So it's those fibers that that resulted in the shortening of the garment that give him his name, Katsra. Omar Rav Yehuda, Hakol Eulin Leminyan Tcheles, VeYitzchak Bri Kopid Olayu. To appreciate this, first of all, let's mention that the word Tcheles is a reference to the mitzvah of tzitzis. In placing the tzitzis strings in the corner of four-cornered garments, there is a distance. There are dimensions and measurements that are necessary, that are binding regarding that mitzvah. And one of the dimensions or measures that one has to keep in mind is that the inserted strings must be at a minimum distance from the very edge of the garment. Tzitzit strings are not to be placed in the very edge of the garment. In measuring the distance from the edge inwards, at which point the tzitzis strings would be inserted, the Gemara here is telling us, Rav Yehuda is telling us, that all strands or threads running around the border of the garment count in terms of that measuring. So the minimum distance from the edge of a garment is called maloi gudel, a thumb distance, a thumb thickness, if you will, from the edge of the garment. If part of that molo gudol, a thumb measure, is made of these strands that we referred to before in processing of garments, the border strands can be removed and kept by the koves. If those strands are still in place and they haven't been removed, they form they contribute to, I say, the formation of the garment, and you can use those strands as part of the measure when you're measuring from the edge inwards to the minimum amount we call maloi gudel. We also saw in the Gemara, Rav Yudas mentioned that his son Yitzchak, he was particular about that. And he would actually remove those three strands. So even if the koveis didn't remove it, he would remove it before inserting the tzitzis. Hachayet sheshir minachut kidei litfor bo. V'kamo litfor. When you say that the tailor left unsewn thread hanging from the garment that he was sewing, we saw that if the strand or the thread measures kidei litfor, that is the property of the balabais, of the owner, not the tailor. The Gemara wants to know, how much is that? What is the shiur of kidei litfor? V'kamo litfor. What is meant by that, litfor? Omar Avasi, maloi machat v'chutz lamachat. So Ravasi says it's a needle length, maloa machat, and beyond the needle. Ibai Eloho, when you say beyond the needle, how much do you mean? Malo machat v'chutz lamachat. We dashed on the line chutz lamachat because we want to focus on how much is that? A, or Aleph, is it kemalo machat? In other words, an additional needle length, so that if a needle, just for argument's sake, measures 2 inches, in order for the strand left unsewn that would belong to the owner, it would have to be 4 inches of thread left dangling. That's malo machat v'chutz lamachat kemalo machat. Oy dilma, or possibly malo machat v'chutz lamachat, how much is outside the machat beyond the 2 inches of needle length? Mashu. So it's 2 inches plus. Toshma. So we have to determine which one of these explanations is the intention of the Mishnah. The Sanya. So we have a source, hachayat shashir es hachut pochois mifdei litfor bo. The chayat, the tailor that left dangling an amount of thread less than Kedei Lefurbo. Umatlis, Shehi Pchuso Mi Sholosh Al Sholosh, or a piece of fabric less than 3 by 3. Bizman Shebalabayas Makbid Alein Hare Elu Shel Balabayas. If the owner is mindful of even that, it remains with the owner. He gets it. Ein habal bayis makbid alein hare elu shelo. If the owner is not mindful of it, so the chayat, the tailor, can keep it. I amr spishlema malo machat v'chutz lemachat kemalo machat. If you go like the aleph suggestion, we mentioned an amount, 4 inches, for example. So if that is what we say belongs to, automatically belongs to the balabayas, pachos mikan, an amount less than 4 inches, let's say 3.5 inches, just for using arbitrary numbers as an example. If you have 3.5 inches of extended thread, when a needle itself measures 2 inches, chozi lesichsa, it has value, has use, it can be used for sichsa. Sichsa is a reference to the chuvin, those little loops that we mentioned at the top of the omid. So it has value in the context of those loops. Eloi amris maloi machat v'chutz l'machat mashehu. If you're going to say that the amount that the owner automatically keeps in the Mishnah was 2 inches and a negligible addition, pachos mikan l'may chozi, what is 2 inches exactly useful for? What value does it have? And in this Tanaic source that we just read, we said that, well, if the chayet leaves malo achut pochos mifte litvorbo, so if the owner is mindful of it, but what would he be mindful of it for if the malo machat, if the kedei litvorbo measurement itself is just a bit more than the needle length? If less than that would be the needle length itself, it has no use. Why would anyone be mindful of that? Elo shma mino, so rather it must be that malo machat v'chutz l'machat klo machat, that the shear in the Mishnah, the measurement in the Mishnah of the extended thread, the dangling thread, was that, was malo machat v'chutz l'machat, beyond the needle, an additional needle length. Shma mino. So this is conclusive. Ma she'achorosh, we spoke about the carpenter, and a distinction was made in the Mishnah between the filings, or particular substance, we call the sawdust, or the saw, the wood fragments that were that resulted from the use of a ma'atzad. So we said the chorosh can keep it. If it was a koshiel, then the owner gets it. Ve'raminhi, and we raise an objection, a contradiction. Ma she'achorosh motzi b'ma'atzad. Notice we dashed underline that. We want to focus on ma'atzad. Ve'ha'nifsak b'megera. Megera is a saw, that which is detached while sawing. Hare elu shel balabayas. And we dashed underline shel balabayas. Contrast that with what the Mishnah taught. The Mishnah mentioned the residue from the ma'atzad use belongs to the chorosh. Here we say the residue from the ma'atzad belongs to the balabayas. Vayoyse mitachas miktoch umitachas rehitni. The residue from the use of a miktach. Miktach, you might explain, it's a device used for making holes in wood. Call it a drill for the time being, for our purposes. That which results in, while drilling into wood, or that which falls from a rehitni. A rehitni is a device that Rashi gives you a French word which reminds you of an English word, a plane, P-L-A-N-E, a device for smoothing out wood. So that the residue from the use of a mikdach or a rehitni happens to be very, very fine, like a very very fine material, very fine powdery substance, and v'hanigrar b'megera, and that which results from the use of a saw, hare elu shelo, and there you have the appropriate term, sawdust. The sawdust, dust, very, very fine material, that is what the carpenter, the artisan, can keep. But to emphasize our problem right now is the issue of the residue from the use of the meratzad vessel. In our Mishnah, we said that belongs to the Chorosh, and in this Tanaic source, which appears contradictory, said it belongs to the Balabais, the owner. Omar Rava, Ba'asra de Tana Didon, in the location of our Mishnah, the author of our Mishnah, Ika Tarti Hatsini. There are two Hatsini. Hatsini will refer to as an umbrella term including vessels, utensils that are used for processing wood, smoothing out wood or what have you. So in the community of our Tanav, the author of our Mishnah, there were two Hatsini. The Rabosi to the larger one, Kori Lo Koshil. The name of the larger Hatsin was a Koshil. Ulizidrosi, the smaller one, Kori Le Meratzad. The larger the vessel, so the larger the pieces or residue that results from its use will be. The smaller the vessel, the finer the pieces, the residue will be. Ba'asra de Tana Bora Chad Hu de Ika Vekoru Lo Ma'atzad. In the location of the second Tanaic source, the Tana Bora, the Braisa that was quoted here, Veramino, as a contradictory source, there was only one vessel, and it was large, and it was called there the Ma'atzad. And therefore, in the Braisa community, the Ma'atzad produced residue that was the same size as the residue produced by the Koshiel in our Mishnah. So there's no contradiction whatsoever. Both sources, when referring to that which the Balabayas keeps, the owner keeps, is a reference to large residue falling from the wood when the larger device was used in processing the wood. V'im hoya oisa etzel v'chulei, tonu rabbonan. Here we refer to the stone chiselers that we alluded to in our earlier introductory remarks. What are the stone of filings, stone residue, to whom does that belong? Misatete avonim, ein bohem mishum gezel. We look at Rashi. Misate avonim, merabea oisonu machlikosom, he takes raw stones and forms them into, we'll say, cube shapes and smooths them down. So there's as far as the residue that results from their working, there's no problem of theft, meaning it's not expected that the owner of the stones would be mindful of it. And therefore, if the worker here happens to accumulate a lot of these stone filings, it wouldn't be a problem of something stolen. We continue in this source, and we have numbered a number of different types of workmen. The five have in common the idea of something being thinned out. You have thinning out of branches, thinning out of vegetables when planted, different kinds of thinning out. So when the item removed in order to achieve the thinning out process, what's the story with regard to that which you're removing? Mefaske ilonos, those are those people that are involved with thinning out tree branches. Mefaske gefanim, the same thing with regard to grapevines. Menakfe higi are bushes, snare, possibly thorn bushes. Menachshe zroyim, the idea here is thinning out vegetables that were planted. the Odre Yerokos. Rashi says Odre Yerokos Kshem Tchufos, when they are densely planted, Yoser Midai, too much. Notil Achas Mimintai Kidei Shehei Mokom Laharchi Lisbashe. Remove every alternating plant, one from amongst them, so that the remaining plants will have room to grow and expand. So as we mentioned, these different activities are all similar in the sense that they have this in common, thinning out. Bizman shebalavayis makbid alehem, when the owner is mindful of that which was removed, yesh bohen mishum gezel, then it would be a problem of theft if they weren't given to the owner. Ein balabayas makbid alehem hareu shelo, if the owner is not mindful of that, as far as he's concerned, you can toss them in a trash bin, so you, the worker, can keep them. Omer v'yuda, koshus hazis ein bohen mishum gezel. Koshus is a type of vegetation, type of growth, and chazes is a reference to grains when they are still early stage of development. They're called, Rashi refers to them, be'odon yerek, when they're still green. They're very young grain stalks, young in their development. That's called chazes. So that my understanding from the context here is that if in thinning out your field, the growth, you're removing koshus and chazes, there's no problem with the worker keeping them. Biasra de kapti yeshva mishum gezel, in locations where the owners are mindful of it, then you can't keep the koshus and chazes. Omer Ravina umasa mechasya, the community of Mechasya, Asra de Kaptihu, that's a place that they are mindful of it. Rashi says, Masa Mechasya Mokum Behemus Hu Utsrichen Lemira Toiv. It's a place that they had animals, and they need it for good quality grazing. Therefore, if you're involved in Masa Mechasya with thinning out the vegetation and you're removing the koshes and chazes, the owners would want you to leave it there for their animals. And as you can readily see, with the help of the one above, we successfully completed Maseches Bava Kama, and the Mirtz Hashem, we should have heavenly assistance, Siyata Deshmaya, to continue Mirtz Hashem with our next Masechta. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.